Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to help gently bend you into better shape with a representative of Connecticut's Yoga in Our City movement. And we're going to let you know how you can tap into free virtual yoga classes to stay in shape and achieve peace of mind from the comfort of your home while gearing up for the 2021 season of outdoor community yoga classes designed by Civic Mind and sponsored by Connecticare. Then it's time for some really big news as we introduce our new executive director and get a sneak peek at what's in store for the 2021 International Festival of Arts and Ideas, which is ramping up its predominantly virtual festival May 14th through June 27th, offering over 200 events, 8 out of 10 available for free. And then we'll close circling back with Operation Hope, zeroing in on this nonprofit's effort to help educate residents who may be at risk of losing their home due to foreclosure. And we'll chat with Senator Tony Huang about how he's supporting that effort at home and in the State House. We'll be right back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. It's no small thing saving a national historic site from tornadoes and hurricanes, and the Barnum Museum has been unyielding in its efforts to save the glorious historical building in downtown Bridgeport, as well as tens of thousands of remarkable artifacts that were impacted by those storms. In a series of new videos, they're taking viewers inside the historic Barnum building to get exclusive glimpses of ongoing phases of construction, exhibition planning, and they'll even show you how their extraordinary designers are reimagining the new Barnum for the 21st century. Check out the latest video, Re-envisioning Barnum, taking viewers on the journey of the museum's fascinating road to recovery from the aftermath of multiple natural disasters. Just go to YouTube and find the Barnum Museum's channel and step right up to enjoy this and other cool videos about this Connecticut treasure right in the heart of downtown Bridgeport. Well, here we are, the first full weekend in March, and our New Year's resolutions to get in better shape or maybe just relax a little bit more are probably a dim and distant memory, if we even remember it at all. But we're going to help you get back on track. That's right. Time for your March resolutions. And one of the big players that's going to help you achieve it is Yoga in Our City. This movement typically offers free outdoor yoga classes at parks in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, and Waterbury during the summer, but due to its success and the current increased demand for programs to provide people physical and mental health benefits, Yoga in Our City is expanding to offer free virtual classes through May, which will both serve as an entree to the outdoor 2021 season, but also help you get ready for it. You know, maybe you want to stretch and bend in your own home before you go and put yourself out there in a public park. And we have got the perfect person to clue us in about it. Yoga in Your City partner, Connecticare's Kimberly Kahn, is with us. She's Senior Director of Public Relations and Corporate Communications at Connecticare. And as we indicated, this program is being brought to you and designed by an organization called Civic Mind. We're going to find all about that as well as this program and tell you how to get involved. Kimberly, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Glad to be able to get you off the mat for a few minutes and get you on the phone to get other people mat bound for this this virtual free session, at least leading up to the summer. And let's go back in history. Flashes back to 2013 when this whole Yoga in Our City program started. What's the backstory?
Sure. Well, the program was created by Civic Mind, which is a community development organization led by TJ Clinch. And the desire was to get people out into parks around the state with yoga, Connecticut. And just as you mentioned, the whole premise is to bring yoga classes to Connecticut residents at parks in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, and Waterbury. The great thing about the program is that the classes are open to residents of all ages, skill levels, backgrounds. They're free. We encourage people, bring the whole family, come on out and reap the benefits of yoga. And the classes typically run, as you referenced, over the summertime. We like to start them around Memorial Day and have them run until the end of September. And the classes are all taught by yoga instructors. So many people that attend have actually experienced yoga classes in other locations with the instructors. So it's a really nice way to bring together people to do something healthy in a park where they can really enjoy the benefits of the park as well.
Yeah, and let's not wait another second to give a big shout out and thank you to all the local yoga instructors who are partnering in many cases with other city agencies who kind of already have relationships with certain segments of the populations in their cities and regions so that they can kind of better entice people to get involved. I think a lot of people hear yoga and they're instantly flashing to these, pretzel-like shapes. And people like me would rather just reach for the pretzel than to become shaped like one. But in fact, as I've been told when I made an inquiry last year, where could I find yoga for fat people? The person just looked at me and said, "You mean yoga?" So
right,
it's really for everyone, but thanks to all the yoga instructors that are stepping up for the Yoga in Our City programs this year, both virtually and in person. So ConnectAir has been such a fantastic reference here on the award-winning For the People, whether it's talking about corporate wellness, diabetes prevention, overall community health. This program seems like the perfect fit for ConnectAir's mission to become more involved in community and public health outreach. Tell us more about how ConnectAir found the program and really kind of blew it up into much greater proportions and are bringing in a lot more people into it, at least up to now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, couldn't agree more. It's a perfect fit for our mission to create healthier futures for our members and communities. Giving back has always been a part of our culture. So the idea of bringing people together for this common goal of, enjoying the benefits of yoga, building community, all of these pieces really attracted us as a sponsor. And when the program was first launched, it was offered in Hartford. And it was hugely successful. So we said, hey, we want to expand the program and add in additional cities. So we added in Bridgeport, New Haven, and Waterbury. And in some parks, that the program draws, more than 100 participants to the classes. So huge following, very loyal folks come out, and we actually have people that travel around to different parks throughout the week in different cities and take the classes. And, in the parks, there's plenty of room for people to spread out. So they get to enjoy the benefits of the park itself, the mental and physical benefits of yoga in a safe environment. And we were so happy that we were able to actually get into the parks last summer. We started a little bit later than usual, although we were able to get out and still do our program. And that's kind of what led us to decide that we needed to add a virtual component. We wanted to be able to get people back into the Yoga in Our City fold or habit and do it in a safe way. So that's where we came up with the idea for virtual classes to start in March and get people ready and excited to go back into the parks as soon as we can do that.
Well, our program was a little late on the upswing. Yeah, there's actually been some virtual classes happening for the past couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, there's, there are virtual classes out there that people can take. We wanted to really get the Yoga in Our City program, kicked off. What we're doing is kind of a neat thing. We're actually pre-recording the classes in our ConnectAir centers, and they'll be archived on the website so people can actually access them kind of wherever and whenever they would like to take a class. So we're going to have new classes coming out, a few times a week. And as I mentioned a moment ago, we're going to continue them until the in-person program begins. We know that people are still feeling, uncertain about attending classes indoors due to the pandemic. And as everyone is excited about getting back into the park, we thought this was really a good time to get these virtual classes underway. So we were really excited to kind of get people geared up and ready to go back into being together in the park.
Now, are some of these instructors that folks are going to meet virtually before the live sessions begin in the warmer weather, are they instructors who, or is it an instructor who was tied to the program in one of the municipalities over the past couple of years?
Well, we're using a variety of instructors, so there's a good possibility if someone does one of the virtual classes that they'll see the instructor out in a park.
Very good. How many sessions are people able to access at this point now that you're ramping up with the virtual yoga classes?
Well, there's a couple that are available currently, but this coming week, the week of March 8th, we're going to start adding more sessions, and we plan to add at least three every week, and they're easily accessed. They can be accessed through our website, through kineticcare.com. They can also be accessed through the Yoga in Our City website, and that is yogainourcity.com. So there'll be the virtual classes will be there. Information about the virtual sessions and the upcoming outdoor programs will be posted there over the coming weeks as well.
Yeah. And people
there's
still
also.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to say there's also Yoga in Our City has a social media presence on both Facebook and Instagram, and there's a lot of additional information there as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You know, kineticcare is so great about aligning groups and aligning people and peers and neighborhoods and families together over like-minded initiatives, whether, as I said, it's corporate wellness or community programs like Yoga in Your City, which kineticcare is bringing now virtually and will bring in person to parks across our major cities in Connecticut in the summer. One of the things, as you mentioned, is people can kind of get into it now in their own home, get to feel comfortable in the clothes, get to feel comfortable with some of the basic exercises, and start enjoying the fact that in a few weeks they'll be able to do things they never thought they'd be able to even manage on their first virtual yoga session. But there's also that social aspect, and as you said, people can get involved and get in on the social networks and get to know others perhaps who will then join them, or as you sort of pointed out earlier, which is really exciting, is they may get to, you know, some folks in Waterbury may make new friends in Hartford and then be able to do maybe the Waterbury Park yoga class on a Tuesday and then go and visit Hartford, say, if they're having the yoga sessions on a Friday, and maybe meet these new friends and create a whole new relationship all over this fantastic Yoga in Your City program. So this is a fantastic opportunity and really well in line with kineticcare's kind of more overall system and protocols, right?
Absolutely. You know, we believe in the health of the whole person. So that involves, you know, physical, mental, spiritual health. We believe that yoga, it does allow people to really benefit. So going back to something you said earlier, these programs are for everyone. No experience is needed. getting involved from the comfort and safety of your own home is a nice way to get a jump on being in those in-person classes in the parks. And we really encourage people to check it out. Do it with your kids. Do it with, you know, whoever you live with, or do it alone. If you're a little unsure or uncertain about, you know, the poses, absolutely put your computer on, you know, no pressure, wear whatever you like, no experience needed. Classes are free, and we really do encourage people to check it out.
And it all starts by just clicking on yogainourcity.com or visiting the ConnecticutCare.com website and getting information and getting signed up. And you're right at that beautiful sweet spot where it's all just getting started. You don't need to feel like you need to catch up, because it's not about that. It's about whatever you can put into it on any given session. And then if you get in on this virtual program now, by the time the parks open up in the warmer weather, you'll be ready to show off your new yoga self out at the parks, and maybe meet some new friends or bring some other folks who never thought they'd get involved in yoga. This is a fantastic thing. Really appreciate you cluing us in on all the details. Kimberly Kahn is at ConnecticutCare. She's a communications representative, and ConnecticutCare, of course, the sponsor of this great program, Yoga in Our City, designed by Civic Mind. Yogainourcity.com, once again, is where you can sign up, or just go to visit ConnecticutCare.com and learn more about it. Kimberly, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we'll look forward to chatting a little bit more, hopefully in the summertime, about yoga in our city, or maybe even doing a For the People segment from one of the yoga classes. How about that?
That sounds great, John. Thank you so much for having me on, and I will look forward to seeing you for that session in the park.
Excellent. Thank you, Kimberly. Yes, nothing makes me more excited than talking about warmer weather and the summer and all kinds of great activities that hopefully we'll be able to do a little bit more in person. And part of our early summer here at the award-winning For the People has always now for 20 plus years involved the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. And the 2021 festival is on, and we are pleased to be bringing in Shelly Kiala. She is the new, is it Shelly? Is it executive director, or do you have a duo or trinity of directors as in past years?
It's executive director.
Very good.
That's not true. but I guess I'm responsible if it doesn't go well. I think that's what executive directors do.
I see. So but we're counting on it going well, because you kind of already
it will go well.
Yeah, you're coming into an envelope here with a very, very experienced team who has already had to be thrown into the fire in terms of experimenting with virtual programming last year. And the thing that I guess we learned was that if you thought the International Festival of Arts and Ideas drew an international audience of visitors to the greater New Haven area in person, man, did you blow it out of the water when it came to putting on virtual programs. You had people from all over the globe virtually visiting New Haven last year.
That is correct. Thank you for that. That's all true. And, you know, one of the things as I was starting to onboard for this position that was quite attractive to me was the fact that the team had, in a year when so many organizations made the tough call of closing or not pursuing programming, decided to just embrace the opportunity, step into it, and pivot into a virtual space. And exactly what you said is true. What that did is actually open up access to people that otherwise would not have been able to come from across the globe. And we really have both the festival's history as well as the connections with our artists to thank for that. One of our artists is in Africa, in Senegal right now, and was able to draw audience from Africa, from the African continent. And we had folks tuning in from Europe and some from Australia, and overall 120,000 people tuned in to the festival. Yeah, over the course of 2 months.
Well, I know it, we always save it as a footnote in a typical interview or preview of the festival, but right up front, I mean, this bodes well for Connecticut and New Haven and the entire Northeastern region, because you have such a massive amount of people who got a taste of New Haven, not just the pizza, but the festival and what Connecticut has to offer. And served as a virtual diplomat to attract hundreds, if not thousands, of more people here, maybe for the first time, maybe to come to this festival once it goes fully live again.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the major goals and tenets of the festival, is really to lift up the brilliance that exists in New Haven and in Connecticut, and to connect it with a global conversation. And so being able to do that in an online platform it was very fulfilling and something we're not letting go of. I know we're going to talk about this coming year, so we're not letting go of those lessons that we learned as we move forward.
Yeah. So let's start with the theme.
Yes.
This is the first big blue sky session of your executiveship, I guess.
Absolutely.
What are we going to call this thing?
Yeah. So the theme this year is Imagine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about having a theme either that was specific to certain parts of programming or embracing of the whole thing. And what we decided was that we wanted to focus, to use a theme, to engage a theme, to open up creativity and to serve as an invitation. And so we wanted it to be simple and yet really powerful. And after coming off of a year where, you know, we have been fighting with and dealing with COVID, we've been confronted in a greater way with racial disparities in our nation, in our world, with socioeconomic disparities. The opportunity to engage our creativity to a positive looking future that we can all participate in, just it was the right thing. And so Imagine is going to move us forward in that direction. And it really is serving as an invitation to artists, invitation to our staff, invitation to the community to say, what does the future look like? What can it look like? Let's not be bound by the things that have felt like the rules of the past. Let's move outside of that.
Excellent. So the Festival 2021 is coming up June 18th through 27th, 200 plus events, and 8 out of 10 of them or more are absolutely free. This is always the best part of the festival, whether on the street or on the screen. So many people, once again, who may not be able to budget plunking down even $20 or $40 for a theater ticket or a dance ticket, even if they could get one to a show that is happening. This is giving a break and maybe giving an opportunity to get whole families involved in front of the screen to watch and learn at this year's festival.
Absolutely. I mean, that the access piece is one that's really core to how the festival came to be and one of its central values as we move forward. And certainly cost is a major part of that, but it's not the only part. Access to travel is another one, which is why being able to move some of the work virtually is really appealing. Access to technology, so we're really pushing, we're celebrating what we have offered and continue to offer in socioeconomic access, and also pushing ourselves to think about, okay, who's still left out? How can we do more? How can we invite more people into the conversation? And art form is another way. So, how we celebrate art and what is considered art, I think, is another opportunity to really drive access and invitation.
Mm. And I really love the quote that is attributed to you about how you're hoping that this year's festival is going to reflect hope in action. There's so many ways for people to get into it: poetry, theater, music, dance. Even a hair art show. We'll talk all about that. It's really incredible. But first, let's go to what you have already kind of started lining up as ticketed events. What are your couple of big ticket numbers so far?
I won't say ticketed. I will say signature events.
Okay.
Because we're focusing actually a lot of the activity that's going to be in person as you know, hoping that we can be in person because we're still waiting to get the final on that.
Yeah, it's looking good.
It's looking good. Yeah. Out on the green. Mm, and good. So Ronald K. Brown, Evidence Dance Company, is one of the groups that we're working with. They are phenomenal. They are based in New York, internationally renowned and traveled. Ronald K. Brown creates work that speaks to the human experience. It's rooted in Black culture. His dancers are exceptionally skilled. There's actually a former dancer with Ronald K. Brown that lives in New Haven, which is a fun connection. We're planning actually to have him in a typical year, we'd have them indoors. Mm. But because indoors are not as safe as outdoor places right now, we're going to be able to offer that performance outside, you know, if we're able to be on the green. Mm. So that's very exciting because that will be a really amazing show and an opportunity for people that wouldn't otherwise be able to see such just accomplished contemporary dance. Mm. Right outside.
Yeah, going,
right outside in the middle of New Haven.
Going all the way back to its humble beginnings, I think one of the things I enjoyed most about the International Festival of Arts and Ideas is how you turn downtown New Haven into a stage in and of itself.
Yes.
Street corners, the green, park benches, the many exterior fixtures at Yale, architecture. It's just you guys are everywhere. But there's still going to be those very interesting interactive events like exhibits and talks, yeah. Right?
Absolutely, yeah. So we are curating an entire series of ideas. They're called ideas talks that will have a future forward. Forward-looking vision to them. So things like Afrofuturism and who are the cutting-edge thinkers and speakers on Afrofuturism and what does indigenous futurism look like? What about the future of food? What are we going to be farming and eating in, you know, 20 years, 50 years? Future of education, transportation, you know, there's so many interesting places to go with those conversations, and they will be a combination of folks that are in New Haven as well as coming from other places, other parts of the world and the country, and tours, of course, tours and food events. There is just a richness of architectural space, of community space, and of food. There's a crazy great food culture in New Haven. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I live right downtown, and I'm out picking up food and enjoying it every night. So we're going to have those experiences
yeah.
as well.
Well, I love the way you guys did it last year where people, buy into the event. They get their food, they pick it up, they take it home, and then the virtual session is actually sitting with a very accomplished chef or food prep specialist who walks everybody through the dish whose ingredients they have right there on their kitchen counter. And we'll hear more about that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Shelley Kiella, who is the new executive director of the International Festival of Arts and Ideas, coming up June 18th through 27th with 200 plus events, 80% of them absolutely free. We'll be back with Shelley to tell you a lot more about the festival and why you need to just pencil in all those dates between the 18th and the 27th, because there'll be something for you every day. We'll be right back. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Immunizations have long been a topic of hesitancy in the Black community. To address this, the American Lung Association has partnered with the Center for Black Health and Equity to provide a science-based toolkit and tracker that will help clarify scientific facts, answer key questions about vaccines, and encourage Connecticut residents to make well-informed decisions about their health. These research-based and factual guides can be used to start a dialogue with your friends, physician, pastor, and family members, supplement to your own research on vaccines, and share accurate information on social media. The toolkit also highlights the contributions of African-American scientists and public health advocates who are helping to bring this pandemic to an end. Find the toolkit site at lung.org. www.thefestivalofarts.org. We're back, and guess what? So is the International Festival of Arts and Ideas for 2021. This is going to be a predominantly virtual festival, and we are hearing all about it with Shelley Kiala. She is the executive director of this year's festival. And Shelley, really, you've got quite a team over there, including Malachi, right? Malachi Eason,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes, Malachi Eason, yes.
Really, talk about... A critical component to your more kind of higher level administrative oversight. He's got his hands on everything.
He does. He is an exceptional leader in performing arts. He actually is from Boston originally and went to a performing arts school, an art school in Boston, has some college years put in Bridgeport, Connecticut, got his undergrad there, so knows the area, used to hang out in New Haven. And then had a career in performing in Los Angeles and ended up in arts administration in Nebraska. So he's really kind of, this is a coming home to a certain degree for him back to the East Coast. But, you know, the strength of the festival really is in the myriad of curators that we have. So there's a wonderful person curating our food and tours, Denise Santiesteban, who knows the community very well. Elizabeth Nearing is curating our idea series. And then, you know, new processes are all informed by conversations with other staff and with the community. So that those, the reason you see such a multiplicity of work is because we have multiple voices contributing to it. And that's really the festival's strength.
Yeah. And interesting kind of little vignettes, including what we teased a little bit earlier before the break, a high fashion hair art show. That's going to be just one of these 200 plus events. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, this is one of Malachi's creative, really specifically his creative contribution. He was a hair artist and he's very tapped into the hair art scene, which is a high level art form in and of itself. The Bonner Brothers do an event in Atlanta on a regular basis. And you watch these, they're called platform artists, come out and do either competitive hair design or in real time hair design. And I mean, we'll see all kinds of things, spinning on top of heads, sculptural pieces on top of heads. And I've assured the folks that maybe don't have their own hair that wigs are also a part of hair art. So there's a place for everyone to participate in this art form.
So we're talking about kind of like Iron Chef, but with hair, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Also, another welcome addition to the program, Indigenous playwright Madeline Sayette. What's that all about?
Yes. Yeah. So Madeline Sayette was on a panel last year talking about Indigenous voices and the and futurism a bit. And she has a beautiful piece. She teaches at Yale. She's the director and playwright, and her piece is called "Where We Belong." And as someone who has studied Shakespeare deeply, she was on her way to England to do a study, a deeper study on Shakespeare, and on the way over had this transformative experience where she really was inspired by her Mohegan ancestry and decided that rather than focusing on how Shakespeare works and that really getting connecting stories from the stories of her ancestors was how she found her pathway. And so she's doing a one-woman piece that has some magical realism in it and some great storytelling pieces where she'll be exploring her identity in connection to Shakespeare.
Excellent. So there are many ways for the community to get involved as well, maybe more this year than ever. I see if you go to artidea.org, their famous website, you can sign up for notifications as all the new news and additions to the festival start out. But it also gives you an opportunity to maybe be involved with this Arts on Call, Shelley.
Yes, this is the second year of this great program that the former director, Bobby Asher, brought to us. It is an opportunity for folks in the Greater New Haven area to engage artists who live here in intimate performances, either in front of their, maybe they want to bind together as an apartment group or a condo association or outside of their home and invite a musician or a dancer, a band or a poet to perform, and the artists get paid. You know, the festival acts as an intermediary, kind of like someone explained it to me as it's not Uber or a Grub, you know, one of those services that connects you directly with the,
right,
what you want to get.
Sure.
And then they're able to experience art in a socially distanced, safe way.
Yes.
So it's arts, really designed for, yeah.
A concierge service for artists
there
and
you
the
go.
Community.
That's the word
there
I'm
you go.
For.
Yes. And also, I mean, it goes without saying, but so many people are talking about it and focusing on it in every every situation. Let's briefly touch upon the anti-racism commitments of the festival.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is really core to my work as an arts administrator, and it's part of my passion. And I was both thrilled and needed to see that it was also core to the festival's commitment moving forward. So we are activating this by investing in some conversations that are happening locally and nationally, just partnered with the city of New Haven to produce Unapologetically Radical, which was a day-long conversation about art equity and racial justice in the arts. We are working with InTempo, that's based in Stamford, Connecticut, on an upcoming conference they have about Latinidad in classical music. And then we're infusing it into everything we do. I mean, it's really going to be core and central to the work you see. And it's also something we're talking about as an organization. You know, what does it look like to be committed to racial justice in the way that we structure ourselves and practice our craft and implement policies and structure payments, and So it's in everything, and we're all in.
Excellent. Well, the International Festival of Arts and Ideas new executive director Shelley Kiala has been kind enough to spend some time with us this morning. May not be the first time we're talking to you, Shelley, or one of your other festival leaders before the big event starts to happen in late May, and certainly the core events between June 18th and 27th, a predominantly virtual festival this year, 2021. Will take place June 18th through 27th. Hopefully, we'll get some activities outside and out into the public space around New Haven. There will be over 200 events, 80% or more of which will be absolutely free. As we heard, bringing in choreographer Ronald K. Brown, Madeline Sayet, and that high fashion hair art show. Just a few of the things you got to tip on early in the announcements, but if you want to know all the details on the festival, just go to artidea.org and sign up, and they'll be sharing their full May and June programming lineup in the coming days and weeks. In the meantime, Shelley, thank you so much for being on the program, and we will talk to you again around the beginning of the main event of the festival. Thanks for your time.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, Shelley, take care.
Thank you so much.
So as we indicated in our introduction, we're going to wrap the program up revisiting our friends at Operation Hope, which provides individuals and families the opportunity to experience transformative change with programs and services focusing on eliminating hunger and homelessness that are designed to help people solve their crises and build stability. And part of that is in ensuring you don't lose the home that you have through foreclosure. And we're so pleased not just to be welcoming Carla Miklos, who's the agency's executive director, but also State Senator Tony Huang, who was the chairman of the Senate and State Legislative Housing Committee, although he's moved on to greener pastures in the new session. He was able to help secure a grant for Operation Hope, $30,000 a couple of months back, to ensure that they could not just sustain but grow a program helping folks who come to them who may be at risk of housing foreclosure. So, Carla, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So, we want to say Carla is out and about in the Greater Bridgeport area right now. So, we may hear a little bit of noise in the background, but not to worry. Carla, first of all, I guess it's important to reinforce the fact that foreclosure forbearance and the way that you folks at Operation Hope have been helping people to avoid foreclosure and counseling them when they face it. That's been a strong component of Operation Hope for quite a while. This is just with a 300% increase in eviction notices since this time last year. This is becoming a problem that no amount of counseling can really kind of catch, right?
Right. You know, it's an interesting time. It's really unprecedented what's happening. And some of it is just unknown. So we're trying to get ahead of the curve. But we were fortunate to get this this grant from the state, which allowed us to sort of fortify up our program a little bit and allow us to hopefully reach more people.
Mm-hmm. So how does the program work?
So the first thing is we need to have people give us a call, and they need to be, of course, Connecticut residents, and let us know what's happening. And my experience, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I worked for many years before I got into nonprofit. I worked in loss mitigation and asset recovery. So a big piece of my work then was foreclosure and helping people get back on their feet. So what we need is for people to not ignore the notices that they're getting, not ignore the phone calls, and to contact us as soon as they know they're in crisis. And then we can kind of put together a plan to see if we can help them or at least educate them about what's about to come so that they can make the best decisions regarding this, this unexpected downturn in their, situation.
And I know you don't have like hard numbers right in front of you because you're kind of out and about, but the ability for Operation Hope to make that difference, to save the homeowner from foreclosure, that has been happening a lot with the people that you're counseling, just because you bring, you and the agency bring this huge breadth of experience to the table. You know all the switches to flip and all the buttons to push to help people take advantage of every single option that they have.
Right. And, in the nonprofit world, no one's an island, right? So it's important to know your resources and to know where you can refer people. And so the earlier on in the process, the easier it is to sort of put a plan together and help somebody sort of maintain their home. Mm-hmm. As that someone goes through the process, if they've been sort of sweeping the mail under the rug or whatever, it gets a little more complicated. And so having a good base of people that we can go to kind of noodle over these problems together, and then knowing that we have some resources to help people get out of trouble, is really the reason why we've been successful. But I can tell you, in the last 7 or 8 months, we've seen pretty much double the number of phone calls. People just asking questions or curious or in situations, and I believe there's much more to come. It's like a watershed.
Yeah. But the bottom line is that given the importance of the banks and the mortgage companies and the landlords as economic drivers of our community and our state, I'm sure you can say from the front lines that these organizations and individuals are much more eager to try to rebuild a successful business relationship with mortgage holders and others, renters, lessees, than incurring the expense of a foreclosure.
Absolutely. My years in asset recovery taught me how expensive it really is for a financial institution or a bank to hold on to property. It's much better for them to negotiate, and they feel better about it too. You know, sometimes they have the reputation of being sort of the bad guy, but the reality is they don't want to lose money, but they also don't want to see people struggle. So if you can get to the right person and you can get to them early enough, they're very willing to negotiate because they don't want to see an upside down housing market.
Right. Well, we're going to let you go right now, Carla, and pick up the line with Senator Huang. But in the meantime, we want to make sure people remember that if they are starting to get notices, they're starting to get foreclosure calls, you can go to OperationHopeCT.org and hopefully take advantage of the assistance they are providing. Operation Hope envisions a time when every person in our community has supportive relationships, hope for the future, and a place to call home and keep home. So, Carla, thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon. So with that great handoff from Carla Miklos, we now hook up with one of our eyes in the State House. State Senator Tony Huang is with us. And as we heard, he was instrumental in getting this grant for Operation Hope to help families struggling against possible mortgage foreclosure on their homes. Tony is the former chair of the Legislative Housing Committee, and although he has moved on to other things in this session, he, by virtue of the fact that he shares the hometown with Operation Hope and the district adjacent to Bridgeport and down into Fairfield County and up into northern Fairfield County, Tony, you are very well aware that this COVID-19 situation has put people who may have thought even a year ago that they would never face the prospect of home foreclosure, who are now kind of looking at the paperwork coming through the mail.
Without a doubt, John, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to talk on your wonderful program. The real challenge is there has been constant pressure even before the pandemic. Now, with the economic free fall and the real uncertainty of what comes next, there's tremendous pressure, and there has been a significant increase in inquiries about foreclosure. It's not happening yet because everything seems to be put on hold because of the moratorium, as well as the freeze in the market in regards to the federal funding and the state kind of putting everything on pause. But obviously, the increase in inquiries has reflected a tremendous concern of where people are going to be when everything gets lifted. And not only that, it really is an important understanding that federal funding has kind of propped up a lot of the challenging situations that many households are experiencing. Yeah. And there is so much uncertainty, so much fear out there. And one of the purposes of this grant is to be able to have people have resources, referrals, and ultimately information to be able to help them go through this difficult and challenging process.
Yeah. Well, that being said, what do you see, maybe not even in this session, but in the next session, what do you see out there on the horizon in terms of what you and your colleagues are, working in bipartisan fashion toward in terms of concepts about how Connecticut might not be able to replace, but at least can like pick up the baton from the Fed once that tide goes out?
Well, I think one of the ways is we have to change the allocation of the federal money. The various CARES Act that's being approved, the millions, if not billions of dollars that are being rolled out, has now, by the structure of it right now, going directly to the executive branch. And the governor, through his executive powers right now, is doling out the allocation. What we need to do is get the legislative body back into that allocation, more of a grassroots representative government to see where this money needs to be allocated. And one of the hardest things about this is the fact that there has been a hold. Everything's been on hold, but bills keep on piling up, and the length of this moratorium as it relates to mortgage easing, but also rental easing, has created a sense of this is way too long. Yeah. If you build up a burden of over a year, you're going to see incredible numbers of foreclosures and evictions.
Yeah, when the avalanche lets loose after the year of heavy snowfall, it's certainly going to do damage. I was going to say, Tony, we saw a situation a few years ago where the state decided it wanted to start taking some of the pressure off of state taxpayers by engaging nonprofits in terms of providing a bigger realm of care for Connecticut residents who need it. Do you see a day coming soon or sooner than later, when the state is also going to engage organizations like Operation Hope in partnership, providing the kind of funding that seeds programs like the one you helped fortify in helping people stay in their homes?
It's one of the great anomalies in the state of Connecticut versus other states in this country, John, is that we have a dual delivery system in Connecticut in which our much valued community partner nonprofits do virtually the same thing as state services. There was a recent study a couple of years back that I pushed for in my years of the legislature to compare apples to apples. And what it was concluding was the fact that our nonprofits do the same work as our state agency work at more efficiency, higher standard, at close to 50% of the cost. So it is one of the anomalies we need to address to increase efficiency, increase reimbursement, to really properly pay our nonprofits the great work that they do, instead of having two-tier systems where there's tremendous inequity that has persisted for many, many a years. Yeah. So it is one of the interesting anomalies. It's a dual delivery system in which the state agency does the same thing as their nonprofits, but they cost significantly more in bureaucracy, benefit cost, and taxpayer burden.
Great. Well, I hate to pin you down to just another minute or so, Tony, but time is growing short, and we really do need to just turn the focus for a moment onto the many landlords who have endured through this. They have had empathy for those who are living in their homes, and the banks, the commerce end of this, that is suffering in their own way. We're looking at a 300% higher incident of filed evictions across Connecticut than this time last year. What is in store for the landlords and the commercial building owners who are also bearing a huge burden?
John, it's a tremendous pressure on all shareholders. You will hear the devastating, tragic stories about evictions and foreclosures, but you're also looking at landlords, not the big mega landlords that have a huge corporate presence, but so many of our landlords are two property, three property, or residents of multi-unit households that may potentially also lose their property because for over a year they've had no rental income and they can't meet their mortgages. So absolutely, there is a social conscious responsibility in regards to addressing evictions and foreclosures, but there is also a business reality that there are a whole year, possibly a year and a half, in which landlords cannot collect rent, cannot pay the necessary repairs, and ultimately the mortgages on their properties that they're leveraging. So it is a challenge that we have to fully address, and I really appreciate that you're bringing all shareholders into this discussion, because sometimes our landlords get left out in this discussion, and they're put under tremendous pressure. Yeah. We have a challenge ahead of us, and my hope is that we address it before it really hits us on the forefront.
Well, we really appreciate you taking time to help us focus on this issue, and for the impetus to focus on it. Senator Tony Huang helping facilitate a $30,000 state grant funding for Operation Hope to support mortgage foreclosure counseling services, an increasing need for many affected by the economic challenges caused by COVID-19. We want to thank Carla Miklos as well, Executive Director of Operation Hope, for giving us a little orientation as to the work their group is doing. Senator Huang, best of luck in the rest of the session. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, John. Be safe and healthy, everyone.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.